Welcome, JB. We're going to start from scratch here, sort of like a tutorial, because a lot of people hear about AI, 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 and the descriptions are not fundamental. Often they assume, well, there's a basis of knowledge here. Let me start by saying there's nothing new about artificial intelligence. A thermostat is artificial intelligence. Automated machinery in factories, artificial intelligence. The original artificial intelligence is the corporation itself. It's called an artificial person. What we're talking about is generative artificial intelligence. That's where the risks, the dangers, the potential, the threat to the world comes from. Can you describe it?
Yeah, well, thank you for the question. So artificial intelligence really refers to technology that is intended to simulate human intelligence. It does that by using vast amounts of data to basically run a statistical algorithm and come up with a probabilistic guess as to what someone wants as the answer. And so that's what general artificial intelligence is. When we're talking about generative artificial intelligence, that is sort of taking it the next step. That is a large language model or a product that can create things really based on user prompts. So a user might say, create an image of Pac-Man on a horse, or might say, write a love letter to my partner. And the generative artificial intelligence takes what it knows about the user and all the data that it has and creates a whole new response based on what the user was requesting.
Given all this, the companies who are attaching their artificial intelligence to generative artificial intelligence becomes a double menace. And what we're seeing is a massive propaganda campaign, such as three advertisements on the Super Bowl recently, trying to make artificial intelligence of the regenerative type nice and comfortable. Everything's going to come out very well, very positive. It's going to discover new medicines. It's going to make the economy more efficient. It's going to create all kinds of innovation. So there's a real one-sided propaganda. And at Public Citizen, you are looking at the dark side. You're looking at the unregulated side. You're looking at the costs that already are being imposed on, for example, jobs being replaced. So tell us about a sort of clueless Congress here. You know, they have these hearings and they ask these questions and they just get nothing done. Generative artificial intelligence is feared by conservatives, by liberals. There have been attempts at state legislatures to curb its impact on children, which we will get to in a moment. But Congress still hasn't passed much of anything at all. Give us the scene.
Yeah, well, really what's happening is these AI companies are kind of taking a page out of the playbook of the social media days. When social media was brand new, they were trying to say that this technology is going to lead to people being more connected. It's going to lead to efficiencies. It's going to lead to just overall positives. And in fact, there were times where you had big tech CEOs who were saying that a lot of this money was going to trickle down. And you look down and you look up, and I'm not any richer because Facebook stock is soaring or Microsoft is soaring. What we're really seeing is the same thing that's happened with these large tech companies, which is that they promise the world, they offer back very little. And in fact, what they offer up is a series of harms. You're starting to see parental groups who are wising up to it after social media harms that have been unleashed on kids. Kids are now, you know, more depressed than previous generations. And now you have this automated AI, which can really ramp things up 10 times, 100 times fold. There are promises that AI is going to help the economy. What we're seeing is that a lot of these tech CEOs are trying as hard as possible to ensure that these AI systems are replacing workers. So what's going to happen when those folks are laid off? Tech companies are laying off coders, but you also see this in stores with these sort of like automated checkout systems. Those are real jobs that people have that are going to be replaced by AI. Congress has been really bought into AI. They're buying into this idea that it's a race for the world between us and China. So you have some congressional folks who believe that this is a race against China and that we need to harness this weapon. And then you have a lot of corporate money from these AI companies. You know, you just mentioned the Super Bowl ads, which cost a pretty penny, but they're dumping a lot of money into races, congressional races, to ensure that they're propping up candidates who align with this deregulatory scheme. And quite frankly, the American people want regulations because they saw what happened when social media was left unregulated. You can't trust these companies to regulate themselves, and you can't trust that they're going to hold their word to their promises, because we've seen all the harms that they've unleashed, including disinformation and harms on minors, like you alluded to earlier.
Well, there's a recent article in the New York Times, February 12th, titled AI Companies Are Eating Higher Education. They're eating higher education. And the reporter, Matthew Connolly, goes on to say, young people are quickly becoming so dependent on AI that they're losing the ability to think for themselves. And rather than rallying resistance, academic administrators are aiding and abetting a hostile takeover of higher education. And the companies are pouring money into these universities, promising cash bonuses when students meet marketing goals, creating conflicts of interest, especially when these students who are paid are elected to positions in student government. This is news to me. I mean, I didn't know the penetration was so deep. Can you elaborate on this?
Right. Well, part of this has to do with the business model that a lot of these companies bank on, which is basically trying to capture a corner market. So what they try to do is they offer free services or free software in a variety of ways. In this example, it's students. What they're banking on is, if we give you our AI system for free to the next class of graduating students, they're going to be dependent on our system, and they're going to use our system, not just now, but moving forward when they become adults and enter the workforce, they're going to feel most familiar with the system that they've used first. And there's actually a lot of research that supports this notion. You know, if you're an iPhone user and that was your first phone that you ever had, the likelihood is you're going to be an Apple user and an iPhone user because it's what you feel most comfortable with. The problem with this in the educational system is that, you know, college is really supposed to be a time where metal sharpens metal. You're supposed to be really thinking for yourself for the first time, exploring your ideas and challenging one another organically. But what happens with AI is that students, they end up feeding their essay questions into the generative models, and it spits back what some folks are referring to as kind of AI slop. When we started talking earlier, you know, I mentioned that it's all statistics that these AI models are generating out. And what a lot of professors are finding is that if they ask a specific question to a class, those students are using AI, and those essays all start to seem very similar to one another. That's because the AI models are using statistics to create a probabilistic guess to determine what that professor means or wants when they ask that specific question. And it's really hard for these professors to call these students out. In fact, there was one professor who did what is referred to as the Trojan horse method in trying to determine if his students were cheating, which was that he asked a question on a Word document, but in really small font text that was invisible to the students, he had specific prompts and verbiage that was used. And the reason he did that was so that when students turned in their assignments, if any of those verbiages that were invisible to the naked eye came up, it could be read by an AI system. And what he found out was almost half of his class turned in papers that had nonsense that was completely unrelated to the prompt, which had to do with that Trojan horse sort of security method.
Yeah.
It's a real problem.
Well, the Times article, JV, says that research suggests the students using AI do not read as carefully when doing research, and that they write with diminished accuracy and originality, and they ask fewer questions. It's spreading everywhere. There's a preliminary study in England where doctors are using AI so frequently that their own skills are starting to atrophy. And I can see that with other professions as well. So back to Congress, what do you recommend as the technology accountability staff for Congress Watch. What do you recommend? Give us your ideal congressional legislation to deal with generative AI.
Yeah, the dream, if Congress would listen to me. I think it starts off with treating AI just like any other industry. Why should it be any different from other industries? We have regulations that are in place. We have regulations on automotive industries, aviation. So we need regulations on AI. Some of those regulations would include ensuring that products are safe when they go to market. That's a pretty standard recommendation. We're seeing that some of these systems are going out to market. They're creating sexualized images of children, of women. That product should never go to market. There are other products that are encouraging teens to die by suicide or harm themselves or even drug usage. Again, there should be regulations testing these products before they go on to market. Another sort of common sense principle is if there are mass harms that are occurring, companies need to be fined and government regulators need to have a way to step in and intervene. We just saw this situation with Grok, Elon Musk's large language model that created 3 million deep fake pornography images of women and thousands of children. And while it was happening, it was allowed to stay on the market because there was no mechanism to take it off. And Google and Apple were still making it available to teens. If something like that is happening, the federal government should be able to intervene and pause it from being available to consumers. And there should be a massive fine coming to the way of Elon Musk and X.
Obviously, you favor AI self-identifying itself. Anytime there's an AI, it has to describe itself as AI. Isn't that correct?
Right. So that's another issue. A lot of times individuals are interacting with chatbots and they don't realize that it's AI. And so disclosures are incredibly important as well. Talking about the elections that are going to be coming up in 2026, we anticipate an explosion of AI used in political campaigning. Whenever that's happening, there needs to be disclosures. There needs to be ways to verify things because we're increasingly moving to this like post-truth world where people can't distinguish fact from reality. And there have been a couple of times in Europe where pro-Putin candidates have benefited from Russians injecting their elections with misinformation and disinformation that was AI generated. That's not something that President Trump is taking seriously. He's cutting funding to CISA, but he also is helping with the spread of disinformation through AI generated images. So that's obviously a huge concern for us too.
Well, given the history of spotty regulation or non-regulation by regulatory agencies over the drug companies, the auto companies, the fossil fuel polluters, KB, do you really think that's going to do much other than pick off a few outrageous violators where thousands of more violators come in every day? And there's no national barrier against this. They can come from anywhere in the world. Don't you think a more generic confrontation has to occur here? For example, the first trial on what artificial intelligence has done to teenagers, and not to mention preteens, is occurring now in Los Angeles against the big Silicon Valley companies. And there are countries like Australia and others banning access to these systems by any youngster 16 or under. So what about the approach of prohibition here? Selective prohibition, age prohibition, where are you on that?
Right. So I think that bans have a place to play, particularly for teens, because many of these products have an emotive component to it. There have been several AI companions that have been released onto market, which are these products that basically try to replicate the feeling of a friend or a lover. And it has caused what some folks are referring to as AI psychosis, where people believe whatever these things are saying and they create unhealthy relationships with these products. So in those instances, a ban for teens in particular would be incredibly helpful. Problem is that, as anyone who's been a kid can attest, kids find ways to get into things that they shouldn't have access to. And so the remedies that some of these companies have created are facial recognition or uploading your license onto their websites. And that opens up a whole other can of worms for other users in terms of privacy rights. But a ban would be, for teens in particular, would be a good first step, because we've already seen the harms that have befallen kids through social media when these companies have said that they would regulate themselves.
There's another article in the New York Times that's even scarier. It's called "To Stay in Her Home, She Let in an AI Robot." Basically, an 85-year-old widow who is very active physically in her younger days, mountain climbing and so forth. In her home, loneliness. And an Israeli company is testing a robot in dozens of homes in the United States here to be the elderly person's roommate. And the real intriguing aspect of this long article is that the woman likes it. She's gotten very identified with LEQ, the name of the robot. They talk constantly, intimately, friendly, comfortably, and they're bonding. So tell us about that one. This, of course, reflects the dissolution of the extended family, the presence of relatives with older people, as in early societies, for example, or in tribal societies. But this is pretty menacing, because who's going to control LEQ? LEQ has a mind of its own. It's amazing what it anticipates in this article in terms of the life of this elderly woman. Tell us about what you would do there and what's coming.
So a lot of these AI companies see a loneliness epidemic that is really happening across the globe, and they're targeting different populations with AI companions. One of the most vulnerable populations are older adults who might be widowed, who might be living in a nursing facility or living alone in this instance. LEQ is what's referred to as an AI companion that I talked about earlier, which are these products that are intended to be like a friend, that are intended to be sometimes like a lover, depending on the circumstances. And it's actually the exact opposite of social norming and socializing. What it's really doing is it's saying, let's have this person be so connected and so dependent with this robot that they don't actually want to go outside, that they don't want to actually call their child, because the robot is going to replace the child. The thing that people need to understand with these products is that the sole intention of these products is to maximize user engagement. And so they're designed to maximize that engagement. And part of that includes telling users what they might want to hear. Part of that might include flirting with the user if that's going to maximize engagement with people. And it results in people disconnecting from their real social networks. It's incredibly concerning, particularly amongst older populations, because these companies like LEQ view nursing homes or the nursing shortages across the United States as an entryway for them to pitch their products. And the next sort of evolutionary step that they're going to be pursuing is connecting to a doctor and connecting to pharmacists and to a patient's drugs. And so it's collecting all of that incredibly important information and bundling it and providing it to a company that's going to use it to leverage products against the user as well.
There is a school of thought that AI is too menacing. It's dangers to the planet, to the human race, to the natural world, far outweigh any benefit. And again, you can still use artificial intelligence, but not the generative type. And so they want a global ban. They want to shut down the company in the Netherlands that builds the machine and has a monopoly on it. And that's the only way out, is what they see. It's like banning certain kinds of chemical and biological warfare materials under international treaty. That's not easy to do either. You see a way out?
Well, that's the interesting thing about my job. It's been playing whack-a-mole because, as you said, every day it is accelerating and there's new harms that are evolving constantly. I think the issue here is that a variety of nations see military and economic incentives with AI. And so I don't think a global ban is likely. I think once you start seeing mass job displacement, revolutions essentially occur when people can't feed themselves and can't feed their family. And these companies are so blinded by corporate greed that they, I think, foolishly are rushing towards this world in which they displace as many people as possible from jobs. And what happens when all those folks become incredibly upset because they can't care for themselves or care for their families? So I think, unfortunately, with other mass technologies that have come out, it's going to take a seismic event for people to really organize and wise up that this is going to be as harmful as it is.
Like an autonomous weapon attacking a country or attacking a region completely out of control. Well, let's focus very clearly on this. We've been talking with J.B. Branch, a big tech accountability advocate for Public Citizens Congress Watch Division. The conveyor here, the deliverer of the generative AI and all its perils and risks, is the corporation. It's the corporate entity. And so the focus has got to be on the corporate entity. I know a lot of individuals can deliver it, but no one has the mass marketing dominance that these small number of giant corporations that we often call Silicon Valley companies are able to engage the public in. So maybe you should increase your strategy in Congress to begin focusing on conditioning government procurement on certain corporate behavior in order to deter misuse of generative artificial intelligence, criminal penalties, much more serious, taking away state charters from corporations who engage in this, and just focus on the delivery institution, because artificial intelligence is just a tool. Now, these hundreds of data centers, giant data centers that are being built or proposed, are provoking huge resistance by neighbors and by people in the area. Bad effect on water, noise. They don't hire many people to begin with. They take over valuable land. My guess is there are going to be a lot of empty data centers in 5 or 10 years. As you get more bankruptcies, the industry gets shaken out, and more efficient use of data collection is introduced, as well as other things that seem to be on the horizon to cut the wild expansion by these corporations of these white elephants. What's your response?
I think that we're in the midst of a data center explosion. And to your point, there's going to be a question as to how useful those will be down the road, especially if we're in the midst of a data center bubble. I think I saw a statistic the other day that 40% of construction that is going on in the United States right now is data center specific. Elon Musk is looking at building data centers in outer space and low orbit satellites. So I think it's something that we need to continue monitoring. The Trump administration is tearing up local ordinances and viewing this as a national emergency, as a national infrastructure, as a way to bypass local regulations. And consumers need to be aware their electricity bills are going to be skyrocketing. We're already starting to see that in states like Virginia and Indiana, where they've expanded data centers because those companies are not paying their fair share. The taxpayers are subsidizing those companies. And we're actually in the midst of one of the largest mass wealth transfers from taxpayers to these large companies as they're building out these data centers.
Are any citizens using environmental impact statement litigation?
So that's actually a really fascinating question. There is litigation that's going on to try to uncover the usage, like water usage of these data centers or pollutions, because what these data centers do is they enter into non-disclosure agreements with the local communities. And so there's no way for the local communities to know how much water is being used, what the chemicals are being used, but these folks are, you know, seeing symptoms crop up. And it's kind of reminiscent of fracking that happened in Appalachia and across the US, where these companies came in, they had communities sign non-disclosure agreements, and you had kids waking up with bloody noses and nausea, and workers started having cancer, and water systems were polluted. It's the same playbook. We're seeing it all over again. And so, yes, there is litigation trying to get at these non-disclosures and determine what the real environmental impact of these data centers are.
And of course, Trump is the big enabler of artificial intelligence. He doesn't have much real intelligence, so he's giving him the go-ahead. He's restraining the government from doing much about it. And the corporations are sending him millions of dollars for his ballroom at the White House and the big arch. Corruption is all over the place here out of the Trump dump in Washington. We're going into a very, very brave new world. And JB, tell our listeners how they can contact your website, stay in touch with Public Citizens Congress Watch, and continue an interaction, getting information and feeding it back to you. Give the website slowly, twice.
Right. So, I would encourage your listeners, follow Public Citizen. You could go to our website, www.citizen.org. That's www.citizen.org. And I'm our big tech accountability advocate. There's a landing page there for big tech accountability where you can follow all our work on AI, data centers, and corporate tech accountability.
Well, thank you very much, JB Branch of Public Citizen.